Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection, and we're here with Blair Horner, one of our favorite people in and around New York State politics. He's the legislative director for the New York Public Interest Research Group, or NYPIRG, and he's something of a living legend because of everything that he's been able to accomplish or not accomplish. Blair, something remarkable has happened. Andrew Cuomo announced that he was going to try to get the Senate for the Democrats. Most of us agree that he didn't do very much to help that happen. I happen to think it's because he wanted the Republicans to be in control. So there were four, or sometimes five, breakaway Democrats. They call themselves the Independent Democratic Conference, headed by a guy named Jeff Klein from the Bronx, of all places. One of the things that Cuomo was able to broker, he said, was that they would go back to the Democrats. The Democrats would have a majority. They would be in charge. But it hasn't worked out, has it?
Nope. Add Simca Felder, by the way, to the list of independent Democrats. There's actually six. So, yeah, I mean, by the way, I'm happy to hear that I'm a living legend. I certainly prefer it to the alternative. I'm with you on that. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, the election turnout allows Jeff Klein and the so-called Independent Democratic Conference, well, they call themselves a Democrat, Independent Democratic Conference, to work, have a working arrangement with the Senate Republicans like they did after the 2010 election, which is really the last time the Senate Republicans took the majority in the House, and the Independent Democratic Conference worked with them then, too. So there is some history here. Not having a numerical majority for the Democrats allows the Independent Democratic Conference to become a wild card in Albany.
And now Dean Skelos, the Republican leader, announces, and more about him later, announces that he wants to work with the Independent Democratic Conference once again, although the Independent Democratic Conference has not yet told us officially that they're going back with the Republicans. The last thing we heard from them is they were going to coalesce with the Democrats, but that would still leave them in the minority. And what is the world's oldest profession again?
Yeah, the oldest profession of ill repute would be a politician. There are other professions that precede it, but
So parse this for us.
Well, you know, having the numerical majority gives the Senate Republicans all the leverage, and if the Independent Democratic Conference wants to have any input into public policy beyond being just part of the minority, they are going to try to leverage their votes with Skelos. I mean, Skelos is a razor-thin Senate Republican majority. There are 32 Republicans out of 63 seats. So he can't afford to lose any of them, to illness, to conscience.
And some of them are quite old.
Well, not that old to me. Alan, they seem younger and younger every year. It's amazing. Or one may have a problem on a vote. So, for example, one of the big issues this year is going to be rent control. It's possible that if you're Senator Golden, for example, from Brooklyn, that you may have an issue with whatever rent control agreement comes out of that. And so,
yeah, you're not going to vote against letting people continue their rent control in New York City if you're a Republican, because you're out.
You could end up with a political problem. So the Independent Democratic Conference could give Skelos a cushion through which he would be able to allow some of his members, let's say on an issue where some Long Island members were not able to vote for it. It gives him the cushion to do that. So if you add Felder and the five members of the Independent Democratic Conference, that would be 38 votes. You could lose as many as six Republicans, for example, on a tough vote.
Who you could let off the hook.
You could let them off the hook, exactly, right.
If they had to be. But there's one other thing that I've been thinking about, too, that makes a certain amount of sense to me. In 2 years, we're going to have a different election.
Right.
We're going to have Hillary Clinton running for president, probably. And if she runs, she's going to be immensely popular in New York. And in the same way, very few people turned out, particularly among those demographic communities that really would make a difference for the Democrats. They're going to come out the next time, probably. And therefore, there's every chance that those Republicans will lose the Senate the next time out.
Well, I mean, if you look at history, if history is any guide, 2008, 2012, the Democrats took the Senate with numerical majorities. Whether or not they were able to get their act together to control the House is another question. Roughly 50-some-odd percent of New Yorkers show up in presidential years. Roughly 30% or so of New Yorkers vote in gubernatorial year elections.
But who are the missing 20%?
That 20% tend to be younger, non-white, female voters who tend to vote more Democratic. And that's why you see the sort of the seesaw at the state Senate level. The interesting thing is you play out the game, right? 2016, let's assume you're right. 2020, but 2022 is redistricting. And so, you know, the game still has to play. But I would agree that if I'm in the Senate Republican majority, I am putting together a two-year legislative strategy that would hopefully ensure that I would still have a majority in 2016. Because Democrats typically do well in New York State in presidential years. And that is another incentive for why they would want to play footsie with the Independent Democratic Conference now, because they may need those votes in 2016.
Now, when the Independent Democratic Conference got together with Dean Skelos and his Republican band, there was an announcement that there would be equality between the two conferences. That never worked out.
Well, I mean, it isn't fair to even think of it, right? There's five Democrats, one Simca Felder, and at the time there were 29 Republicans, right? So, of course, they have the votes. They should have more than
equal. That's not what they said.
No, but they did. What they really meant, as it turns out, was this sort of co-leader arrangement where Klein and Skelos, on some sort of rotating basis, controlled the House. Effectively,
the Senate,
it meant the in the Senate.
Yeah.
Effectively, it meant the Republicans were in control. I mean, that's the way it worked out. But Klein did have some control over the agenda on what bills moved to the floor, and he didn't have that in 2010, and I think it's an open question whether or not he'll have it in 2015.
Whether they have to give it to him. I want to go back to something else here, Blair, and people call me a one-horse, one-trick pony, whatever they call me, and they say...
call me a nag, so there you go. You win on this one.
You never shut up about this, Alan, and I will never shut up about it, because it makes me crazy-er. And that is the idea that Dean Skelos gets to, with Andrew Cuomo's help, I have to say, gets to draw his own districts where he can't lose. I always say, my God, if you go to the worst places in the world and we send our people and say, that's not democracy, we have to fight against them, and here we let this guy, and also the assembly leader, right, but who doesn't need it, to draw their own districts and tell the computer, oh, great computer, draw me districts where we can't lose. Makes me nuts.
It shouldn't make you nuts. That's the way it's worked here forever, right? Since the dinosaurs roamed the earth.
But it ain't democracy.
No, it's awful.
And as every little kid knows, it isn't fair.
It isn't fair. It's awful. It's abysmal. It's beyond the pale. You know, I could keep going on this, too. It makes me crazy, too.
And
by the way, it's not unusual in New York, though. I mean, much of the rest of the country does the same thing. And in some places, like in Texas, they're even worse.
Yeah.
So it is a distortion of American democracy, no doubt about it. It's unfair. We should believe in one person, one vote. And yet we have state constitutions that allow anything but that.
Yeah. Because it's all part of the IPP, or incumbent protection plan.
Right.
Who do you think makes these laws and these constitutions except the guys who are going to benefit them? Hey, I hear that the legislators want a pay raise.
Oh, they hold the front page.
Hold the front page. But when the newspaper goes up to any and all of them, says, do you need to have a pay raise? Oh, no, no. So that's why the leader is the leader, because the leader has to take the heat.
Well, there hasn't, in fairness to them, there hasn't been a pay raise that's gone into effect since 1999. And it was part of a deal that was cut between then-Governor George Pataki and the legislative leaders, and Pataki wanted charter schools. And he got it. That's how he got it done. There were other proposals that were in that package. There was a legislative proposal to allow New York to join the Dairy Compact, which helped farmers, but also increased milk prices. There was a third bill dealing with so-called budget reform, which was sort of a joke. And that was the cover for a pay raise 15 years ago. What would be the cover this time is an interesting question, right? This is being framed as, I've seen one state senator go on the record saying, well, it's because we're getting paid so lousy. By the way, I'm sure that many of your listeners, Alan, would like to make $80,000 a year when viewed as so terrible.
You bet. And it is not only $80,000, because it's a leadership state and everybody has a leadership title. And most of them make closer to $100,000 than to $79,000.
That's exactly right. Unless you're an assembly Democrat, half of them don't get any of the Lulus. No. Everyone else does. But New York is around the fourth highest salary of any state in the country for legislators. They haven't had a raise in 15 years. They're arguing that this is somehow an ethics reform, sort of ironically saying that
if
we get paid more, then we wouldn't have to be so corrupt to raise money on the side. That's the basic sort of implicit argument.
That is so stupid.
It's insane, right? It's insane.
Yeah.
But that is sort of what's sort of floating out there.
Hey, say anything you want.
That's right. Well, anything to create the head fake. So if they're going to go down the ethics path, I don't think raising their salaries is going to make anybody behave any different. But clearly there should be real ethics reforms. And the U.S. Well, the U.S. Attorney's Office is lurking out there. Who knows what they're going to come up with?
Well, here's the deal. Obviously, these people make money on the side, as you just said.
They're all out.
And they're allowed to under this system. But when with all of the phony Maloney ethics packages that the governor comes up with another and makes common cause with them on, one of the things is that they have to tell us how much money they're making within this amount and that amount.
Right.
That's nuts. Why not just say, this is how much I make?
Yeah, right. I mean, well, they do have to file something called taxes, right? And so whatever the number is that they report to the IRS should easily be the number that they report to the rest of us, right? I mean, they are elected officials.
But
that's
we don't
a reasonable
necessarily
argument.
Get to see their tax returns.
No, we don't at all, unless they choose to voluntarily disclose them. But we do have these bans. And what they did do last time, in fairness, there used to be a wide range. There was a small band of income ranges that they allowed.
Sure.
And now they've now made those bands much, much narrower.
Tough noogies. I don't care. Just tell us how much you're making on the outside.
I would like to have somebody enforcing this stuff, too. Yeah. I mean, the other problem you have is you can have disclosure, up the wazoo about everything that they do. They could still lie. Somebody has to check the stuff. And we have a system now that relies on the U.S. Attorney's Office, and they don't have any jurisdiction over that.
Speaking of which, when Governor Cuomo announced that he was basically killing the Moreland Act Commission, which was looking into corruption, which caused a lot of problems, but nobody objected as loudly, I think, at the time, as Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney.
I was complaining.
Yeah, well, you were complaining, and I was complaining, but who are we? And the U.S. attorney, when the U.S. attorney speaks, everybody listens, especially if you're a state legislator, especially if you're doing some things that might be compromised. We've all been waiting. It's an old Yiddish term, sitting on spilkes, meaning pins and needles, waiting to see what he was going to do. And so far, nothing.
No, that's right. I mean, the thing that's the wild card in this stuff is, what is the U.S. attorney's office going to do, if anything? We really don't know. All we know is that they've seized the records of the Moreland Commission. They have independent investigations going on, and when the U.S. Attorney's Office has talked about it, he's talked about it in the plural, not in the singular. But we don't know what they're doing, and you can't really make them go faster, right? They're not some sort of pressurable group, thank God. So whether or not they come out with something soon or they come out with something next year is anyone's guess. But if they come out with anything, it's going to be something that will scramble the board again, because if a number of lawmakers end up getting indicted, or there's a report that's very negative on the governor's role in killing the Moreland Commission, that's going to create new pressure on the legislature and the governor to actually do something meaningful. And I think New Yorkers should just say we're fed up with these phony baloney reforms, and then we want the real thing.
They don't even know who the legislators are. What do you mean they want? We're fed up with it. They have no idea about nothing. So that's one of the problems.
You're so cynical, Alan.
Oh, boy,
it sounds like you're a two-trick pony, right? You had the thing about the lines, and now nobody knows who their legislators are.
Well, okay, that's true. Okay, so now there's some settlement money coming to New York State. What's that?
Well, there's the big one is really about banks ripping off homeowners during the last economic meltdown, where they were playing games with people's mortgages. And there were, in some cases, many people who were getting foreclosed upon, and they shouldn't have been getting foreclosed upon because the paperwork wasn't right. And so there have been settlements between the New York State Attorney General, Eric Schneiderman, just so people know who his name is.
Just reelected.
Just to follow up on your comment, your sort of cynical comment before. I'm just helping. I'm educating your listeners.
Well, that's a very good idea. You mean our listeners. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. And it's, it's in the billions of dollars. It's $4 to $5 billion with J.P. Morgan alone. And so that money flows into state treasury, where it will be, some of it will be used to try to help compensate homeowners who are in this terrible situation. And some of it will go into the into the budget process, which allows, I think, which allows the governor and the legislative leaders to try to figure out what they want to do with it. Some will argue they should use it for tax cuts, which I think would be a bad idea. Not that I'm anti-tax cut, but just this is a one shot. If you do a tax cut, that means every year you have to make up the money. And I believe the state should be investing it in things to make programs work better in New York State. So we'll see what happens. I mean, that's the it's the 800-pound gorilla in the budgetary room next year. These extra billions of dollars that the state will have to be able to spend to deal with whatever they're going to do on the budget.
Well, let's talk education for a minute. Andrew Cuomo's in a little bit of trouble, a little bit of hot water with the teachers in this state, who are not very happy with him because he just recently uttered a remark. I love the word uttered. Uttered a remark about...
This has nothing to do with bovines.
No, that would be uttered. This is uttered. Uttered a remark in which he said that education in New York is the last great monopoly. What do you mean by that?
Well, you should have him on your show and ask him. I assume he means that there's no real free enterprise element to it, that people have to go to public schools or they pay more to go to private schools, that charters aren't meaningful competition, I guess, in this monopoly workplace that the governor describes. But yes, you're right. I mean, it's certainly not the kind of thing the teachers wanted to hear. The governor and the teachers union have been at it since almost day one. As you may recall, they didn't endorse him in 2010.
I also may recall that this governor got a million less votes in this election, which far fewer voters came out into. I'm presuming a lot of those people were people who believe in education and teachers.
Well, there's no doubt that there was a low turnout in New York, and there's no doubt it was on the Democratic side. I mean, Astorino got roughly the same number in votes as Palladino 4 years ago. So if the 600, 700, 800, 900 million fewer voters show up, you know, it came out of the Democratic column. And I think part of it is the public fights the governors have with the public employee unions. I think part of it is his tight fiscal policies. I mean, I don't think anybody would argue that he's a liberal when it comes to fiscal policy of the state. That suppressed turnout, I think, on the Democratic side, coupled with what he argues, which is, again, there's sort of a Republican wave that sort of rolled through the country, not just in New York. There's a Republican governor in Maryland. There's a Republican governor in Massachusetts. And those are blue states.
True. But how can he afford to alienate all the teachers in New York State?
Well, I mean, it's hard to get into the mind of a politician, right? I mean, if you look at it purely on the substance, maybe he just disagrees with them, right? If you look at it from the politics, and if he's a governor of New York, and all governors of New York sort of fancy themselves as future presidents, presenting yourself as a fiscal centrist may be the kind of thing that he wants to be branded as going into
2016. So the teachers become the whipping boy?
The public employee unions generally, and I mean, none of them are happy with him, but the teachers are in a different category because the teachers are big and strong enough to go toe-to-toe with a very powerful governor. And you saw it happen in that Senate race out in Buffalo, where incumbent Senator Mark Rosanti was knocked out. Now, he was knocked out in the primary where the teachers weighed in on behalf of a Tea Party opponent. So the moderate Republican from a district that is overwhelmingly Democratic enrollment advantage gets knocked out in the primary. The Democrats take that Senate seat. That did not play well with the governor. But the teachers union is a big, powerful interest group that has members in every community where people live in the state. And they can go toe-to-toe with the governor. And so Governor Cuomo has his hands full when he takes on the teachers.
Let me go back to the political parties in the state. And there's a Working Families Party. They had to decide whether to endorse Zephyr Teachout you'll remember this, of course, or Andrew Cuomo because of other union pressure from other union places other than the teachers. They endorsed Cuomo. I think they have some buyer's remorse right now.
Well, I think that there's no doubt, given that Teachout then primaries the governor in the Democratic primary, that there's a substantial part of the left wing of the Democratic Party that's not happy with the governor. And I was sort of surprised. I felt like the governor is a very capable politician who has, in my judgment, very keen political sonar. He can see over the horizon. I think he just missed the Teachout phenomena and allowed her to define him in the summer. He never really responded to her. And I think that sort of created a narrative that made it hard for liberals to want to vote for Andrew Cuomo. Now, and I think it came back to bite him in the fall, and that helped suppress the turnout. So I think the Working Families Party, which is the left wing of the Democratic Party, in reality, it's a large number of liberal activists combined with some liberal unions. They didn't want to be that, you know, the unions in particular are the money and the muscle behind the Working Families Party. They didn't want to be on the other side of a governor they knew was going to win because they have other fish frying besides just the Working Families Party.
I knew there was some stink.
And so, you know, and the Moreland stuff, you know, some of the Moreland revelations came out after the Working Families Party convention. And so, yeah, I'm sure that there are some among the Working Families Party that were not happy. And I think you saw it reflected in the Green Party vote, which is they saw a huge increase in the number of people that voted for Howie Hawkins this last time. And that was where those voters went.
And the people in the Working Families, the leadership in the Working Families Party has really blasted Cuomo since that election. And I think if they had it to do over again, maybe they would have done it differently. I don't know.
Well, maybe. I mean, you know, it's always hard to tell. I mean, why are political parties,
yeah,
you know?
Sure.
And is it really ideology? Is it, you know, that people have agendas that they want to advance? And, you know, you have to make your political determination often based on the lesser of two options.
We only have 3 minutes, so I want to go fast on these.
Sure.
Round. You and I both had some real reservations about the redistricting ballot amendment. We thought it was a phony.
It is.
Yeah, it is, but it passed.
Yep.
And so will that issue now go away?
Well,
though it's my number one issue?
It will probably go away as a legislative initiative. And then in the year 2022, I will be back on your show. We'll be sitting right here, Alan, the two of us. New technology. And we'll have Dave Gastina's, you know, child in here probably producing the piece. And it'll be the two of us once again. And we'll be talking about how horrible the district lines are that came out in the year 2022. I mean, my prediction will be it'll turn out to be really just a vote to keep the status quo more or less the way it is. In some ways better, in some ways worse.
Finally, a woman I much admire, Nancy Zimpfer, who is the SUNY chancellor, and who clearly knows the political game, knows how to get along with Andrew Cuomo, the governor, and others, and her brilliance in running a very diverse and difficult system is, can't be denied. But we just had a spate of stories that her salary was about to be raised in a huge fashion, and she has now said she doesn't want it, that salary adjustment. So what do you make of that?
I think she should give it to WAMC. It's got to go somewhere.
Yeah, how do you know she doesn't give it to WMC? So
I was surprised it got to where it did. You know, I mean, this is the Cuomo administration.
It was
right?
A trial balloon, maybe.
Well, I mean, the SUNY board, you know, was actually supportive of it, and so I mean, you compare her salary with the CUNY chancellor's salary.
Yeah, it's not as much.
It's not as much, and if they had bumped it up, it would have been comparable. You can make a case for it. But I was surprised it got to where it did, where she would then have to publicly say that she didn't want it. Which I thought was just sort of an odd story.
Did somebody call in the play? Somebody.
Well, somebody ran an audible when they weren't supposed to.
It is always great to have a great friend Blair Horner with us. Blair, I can't tell you how much I admire you. He's the legislative director for the New York Public Interest Group. You know, when other lobbyists are committing seppuku one way or the other, Blair always stands up and takes the heat and is always there. So thanks so much for joining us. It's wonderful to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gastina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.